June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples, breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus. When you go to the doctor, you expect answers. Treatments grounded in generations of research and medical expertise. But that knowledge rests on a foundation that few people talk about. In the early days of modern medicine, doctors needed a way to study the human body. There were no x-rays, no MRI machines, so dissection was the only option. But there was a major problem. No one wanted to volunteer their body to science. So medical schools turned to grave robbers. In some cases, they even sent medical students to dig up the recently buried. Horrifying as it sounds, this was how anatomy was taught and how medical science advanced. We like to think that that part of history is behind us, but in 2023, it reemerged in a shocking new form. A federal indictment sent shockwaves through the medical world, raising serious questions about one of the country's most prestigious institutions, Harvard Medical School, and impacting hundreds of families, including two you'll hear from in this episode. I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, the story of the Harvard morgue.
My dad was born here in Massachusetts in Newburyport, Mass. And Newburyport at that time frame was very blue collar, very poor, to be honest.
That's Janine Cunningham. Her family lived in Newburyport, a historic seaport on the New England coast. Her father, Marshall, loved being near the ocean.
From as long as he could remember, he had eel traps out. He fished as a kid up and down the river. He served in the Navy, so his love for the water was just a part of him. That's who he was.
When Marshall wasn't out on the water, he worked as a nurse, a job that gave him great appreciation for medical science.
He thought it was very important that doctors get to know how the human body works and how we could benefit from that.
For as long as Janine can remember, her dad talked about donating his body to science.
He asked me to do some research and to see what it entailed and how we could go about that. So I did that. I went, did some research, came up with a couple of places and suggestions, and we both decided that it was probably the best place to go was Harvard. I mean, Harvard's the mecca of medical schools.
Meanwhile, just across the state line in New Hampshire, not far from Janine's home, another family was having similar conversations.
My parents were from New Hampshire. They were both law enforcement officers. My father was a deputy sheriff of the Rockingham County, and my mother was a Placer police officer.
That's Paula Peltonovich.
They decided, I think it was in the year 2012, to donate their bodies to science. As police officers, they've done so much for the communities, and they wanted to help the new medical or dental doctors in the future.
Like Janine's father, Paula's parents chose to donate to Harvard's anatomical gift program. Here's Janine explaining how it works.
I actually have a contract that you sign. It lays out what their purpose is, what's going to happen. They give you contact information so that when you do pass, you can call this number and they take care of everything. They come and pick up the body. They were very respectful. That was really important at the time because it was stressful when he passed. You know, he got cancer.
On November 25th, 2017, Janine's father passed away after a battle with cancer.
They came and picked him up, and that was really all that we really had to do. But they did spell in out in that contract that they would keep the body for a year, that there would be no reports or information that they would be able to share with us as to what they did, what they found, what kind of things were done.
2 years later, Paula's father passed away. Like Marshall, his body was donated to Harvard. After Harvard completed its research on the bodies, both Janine and Paula received a box of ashes in the mail, just as they'd been told to expect. But what came next was something neither of them could have anticipated.
A new FBI search is now linked to a store that sells what it calls creepy dolls.
It has confirmed that yesterday there were two searches all day long, one at that business in Peabody and one at the business owner's home here on this street in Salem.
In March 2023, the FBI descended on a curiosity shop in Peabody, Massachusetts, a quiet suburb with little reason to make headlines. The shop was called Cat's Creepy Creations.
They were a little cryptic about what they were looking at, but they did mention at the curiosity shop that there was some skin that was used to make a doll. Some of the other parts that they mentioned were actual vertebrae, skull, some actual organs.
The organs Janine is referring to, the ones used to make the dolls, were human. Human skin, vertebrae, even skulls. What neither Janine nor Paula knew at the time was that the raid was part of a much larger investigation, one that would lead directly to Harvard Medical School.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
The easiest thing you'll ever do is keep your car serviced with Roda.
That's a real 5-star Google review from Diana S. And honestly, she nailed it. Roda is the DMV's most trusted auto shop. Maintenance, repairs, and detailing with free valet pickup and drop-off, no hidden fees and no pressure. Book in minutes at Roda.com and save 20% with code POD20. It's Roda. Duh.
We never said as a society, these are our values and how we're going to deal with human remains. Instead, we have a system of laws that arose because there was a crisis and then there was a response to the crisis.
That's Tanya Marsh. Tanya is a law professor at Wake Forest University and is one of the only experts on laws surrounding human remains in the United States.
I have people email me all the time with strange questions. And one that I have actually got this question several times is a person says, I obtained a skull. The person who most recently reached out to me is an estate planning attorney, and her client has a skull that she inherited or something. And she wants to figure out how to dispose of the skull. There is no legal mechanism for disposing of a skull if we don't know whose skull it is.
So you can't legally throw away a human skull. But a cemetery won't bury it if no one knows who it belonged to. The laws around human remains are confusing. And according to Tanya, that confusion goes all the way back to the founding of the United States.
On the very front end of the development of the American legal system, we just adopted English law that was in place at the time of the American Revolution. But English common law, that is judge-made law, was completely silent about human remains. And that's because England had an established Church of England.
When the U.S. won independence, it didn't have a legal system or a constitution. So in the meantime, we borrowed from England, adopting what's known as common law. That covered most things, but not human remains. In England, matters of the dead were handled by the church, not the courts. So when the United States adopted common law, it inherited a major legal blind spot.
And people, of course, had been dying in the colonies as long as there had been colonies. And it wasn't until the mid-1800s that we started to get any law in the United States with respect to human remains.
And at the same time, a revolution was unfolding in medical science, one that relied almost entirely on those legally ambiguous human remains.
When medical schools started using cadavers in gross anatomy labs to teach medical students, and also they were doing autopsies in sort of theaters for other doctors and medical students to watch the procedure, and that was all a part of medical education, they obviously needed a source of cadavers.
Accessing cadavers wasn't exactly easy. In the 1700s and 1800s, America was a deeply religious country, and many believed that disturbing a body after death could jeopardize their chances of resurrection. As a result, few were willing to donate their bodies to science.
It was only human remains, really without consent, people who didn't have any means to consent, whose bodies were being used. So the most immediate social problem that we had was grave robbery. And medical schools would often leave it to medical students to get their bodies on their own, which I'm not sure what the thought process was there, but medical students either engaged in grave robbery themselves or hired grave robbers or paid grave robbers to obtain fresh cadavers.
Grave robbery was common practice, even at Harvard. In fact, in 1770, the man who would later found Harvard Medical School began dissecting stolen cadavers right on campus.
Of course, we didn't have, you know, refrigeration and things like that, right? So they went through the bodies much more quickly in the course of their medical education.
Eventually, the public caught on. So medical students turned to cemeteries that were less protected. Places like black burial grounds and potter's fields, where the dead were often poor and overlooked. Medical schools also began partnering with county coroners, who supplied them with unclaimed or unidentified bodies. And by the mid-20th century, religious attitudes had begun to shift, making body donation more culturally acceptable.
We do have people who are willing to donate their bodies to science. The well-known medical schools get plenty of bodies.
So today, medical schools no longer have to rely on cadavers of questionable origin. But there's still a market for them. A sprawling network of collectors and dealers who actively seek out human remains.
This is a group of people that is not well known or understood. Some folks who are in this community are very transparent about what it is that they do. They have TikTok channels, they have websites, they go on Instagram and see their interest in human remains as sort of a natural scientific interest. And then there's other folks who are not as public. And so it's very hard to sort of quantify how many people are engaged in this activity. We have no idea how many human remains are in private hands.
Collectors buy human remains for all kinds of reasons, from morbid curiosity to obscure religious practices. But in almost every case, the body parts they acquire were never intended to end up in private hands. Which brings us back to Kat's Creepy Creations, the shop we mentioned earlier that was raided by the FBI. As it turns out, the store was selling creepy creations, dolls and trinkets made with actual human remains. So, where were they getting these human remains? Investigators traced the source to a man named Cedric Lodge, none other than the manager of the Harvard morgue.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards pay back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
It's the morning of June 14th, 2023. A story on the news catches Janine's attention.
The manager of the morgue at Harvard Medical School is accused of stealing human body parts from cadavers and then selling them. And these are cadavers donated for medical research. He now faces federal
charges. We saw it on the news first. And then my brother called me and said, "Did you see all of this?" And I said, "I saw some of it. What's going on? What did you hear?" But the more you heard, the more horrific it began to sound.
Paula also heard the news that morning.
I heard it on the radio in my car. That's how I heard about it. That's how I was notified.
News broke that Cedric Lodge, the manager of the Harvard morgue, was indicted by a grand jury. According to the indictment, Lodge was selling body parts from cadavers at the Harvard morgue without knowledge or permission of the families.
Then Harvard had to quick send out an overnight express letter to everybody. And it was a stupid little standard letter.
Paula received a letter from Harvard Medical School. It included an apology, but also a chilling disclaimer. Based on current records, they couldn't rule out the possibility that her father was among the victims. Janine got the same letter.
I think the letter came the next day or two. And they had given a phone number to call if you had questions. And so I did call the phone number. She asked some questions and I gave her my father's information. And she said, "Well, I believe he would be one of them."
Even after the initial shock wore off, Janine struggled to process the news.
It was a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of tears. It was just plain horrific. It was hard to lay your head down to go to sleep at night without thinking about where he might be or what they might have done. Or it just was some of the most horrible, difficult conversations that we had with one another.
As the weeks went on, more disturbing details came to light. According to the indictment, Cedric Lodge had arranged the sale and distribution of human body parts to buyers across the country. When a body was being prepared for cremation, Lodge would allegedly remove and sell parts before the process was complete. In some cases, he even invited buyers into the Harvard morgue, a space typically off limits to the public, so they could personally choose which parts they wanted. He'd then agree on a price, take the selected parts home, and ship them out once payment was received. Lodge's wife was also indicted. Her PayPal account revealed years of transactions. One buyer in Pennsylvania had paid over $30,000 across 39 purchases, including $1,000 for something labeled head number 7 and $200 for brains, spelled with 6 I's. The news was far more horrifying than anything Paula or Janine could have imagined. It hit Paula's brother especially hard.
My brother had nightmares. He had nightmares that somebody had my father's head in a jar of formaldehyde on their, one night it would be like on their mantle, one night it would be on a desk, and one night it would be on a bookshelf. And he just was throwing up. He had nightmares so much.
For Paula and Janine's families, the nightmares don't end when they wake up, because their parents' bodies are likely still out there, lost to the black market.
Not knowing what became of everything. Where is he? Is he some part of a necklace someplace? Or is he cover of a book somewhere? I mean, just the thoughts of it all is horrific. I don't think we'll ever know. They've sentenced us to a life of unknown. We have no idea. And we never will. Probably.
Janine and Paula don't even know if the ashes they received in the mail belonged to their fathers.
Not only did we have to deal with the loss of him physically and his dying, we now had to deal with the fact that we don't even know what happened to him and or do we even have him. I have to believe that that is him. I have to believe that I did get him, just not all of him. That's how I've had to come to terms with that. My brother kept saying, this is worse than a Hollywood horror show. Who would ever think this? From Harvard.
Cedric Lodge began working at Harvard in 1995 and stayed for nearly 3 decades. But investigators only examined a 5-year window, from 2018 to 2023, leaving open a troubling question. How long had this really been going on? We'll likely never know. And that's just one of the many questions that may never be answered.
We'll never, even if they tell us, oh, this is what he, you know, what we took and here it is. How do I know they're being truthful? If you did that to begin with, how honest are you going to be? I doubt it. So we'll never really, really know if, you know, we got everything back or if he's laid to rest in one piece. We'll just never know.
In April 2025, Cedric Lodge filed a guilty plea, but the case has not been smooth sailing. Think back to what Tanya said earlier in the episode about the patchwork of laws surrounding human remains.
Modern Americans are an incredibly death-avoidant culture. We don't like to admit that death is coming for us all. And I think as a result of that, we don't want to engage in social conversations and we don't want to engage in public policy discussions about the rules that should apply to human remains. And so that leaves enormous gaps in the law because we never as a society sat down and said, these are the things that we value and here's how we're going to create a system of rules that expresses what our values are with respect to human remains. Everything that's come to light about this trade and private collections in human remains, I think is quite shocking because it really violates these unspoken, quiet social norms about what the right way to treat human remains are. But we never bothered to translate those social norms into law. So we don't have enforcement mechanisms. We just have this sort of not universally shared understanding about what the rules ought to be.
Only a quarter of states actually prohibit the buying and selling of human remains. And there is no federal law prohibiting the sale of human remains.
Human remains are not property in the United States. So we have laws that deal with people and we have laws that deal with property. And pretty much everything is either a living human being or it's property. And so because human remains are not treated as property in the American legal system, none of the laws about property apply to them, which creates this huge gray area, especially when you're treating human remains like they're an object of commerce, but they're not legally, technically, they're not an object of commerce. So none of those rules apply.
And Lodge's defense team is leaning heavily on that argument. In March, they filed a motion to dismiss several of the charges, citing it directly.
To think that the lawyer wants to get his case thrown out because there's no value to a body. Well, he set that value himself when he sold it. And whether there's a financial amount set to that, I don't think you could do that. It's morally wrong. It's unethical. And the fact that you did it under cloak and dagger, if you will, says so right there.
As for Harvard's response, Harvard Medical School says it placed Lodge on leave as soon as it learned of the investigation and fired him once it believed there were grounds to do so. The school maintains it had no knowledge of Lodge's actions before the federal probe. But Janine finds that hard to believe.
How you can say that you didn't know what was going on when you had cameras at all the doors and see people coming and going with bags that they left with? At some point, somebody was watching him. So how do you say, well, we had no idea and nobody oversaw that?
Families like Janine's and Paula's are also angry that they first learned about the scandal from news reports at the same time as the general public and more than a month after Lodge was fired. Harvard has yet to offer a clear explanation for the delay. Now, as the criminal case against Lodge moves forward, Paula, Janine, and other affected families are suing Harvard in civil court.
We all agreed that the priority here was, it had nothing to do with financial or anything of that sort. It was to change the processes.
Janine has a medical background and has experiences working to fix failed processes, like what happened at Harvard.
And I worked in a small community hospital. We would include the patient and or family members so that they understood what the process was and would help us. And so that they knew the outcome was, this won't happen again. Because we fixed whatever that issue was. But they circled the wagons and they pulled in somebody from outside and they claim that they have made changes. We don't know what changes they did make. This can never happen again. This cannot.
Harvard Medical School says it's fully cooperating with the FBI and has brought in a team of outside experts to review the anatomical gift program and recommend reforms. But rebuilding trust after a breach like this is an uphill battle.
My brother had decided that he was going to do the same thing and donate his body. He definitely will not do that now, which is too bad because there's going to be a loss of knowledge and new physicians coming in. I mean, you know, in medical school, that's their first patient. They actually build a relationship with that cadaver and they actually get to know that person pretty darn well. I had several physicians talk to me about their first cadaver and what it meant to them. Having worked with some of them, they shared some of that experience, which I think was meaningful.
While they wait for progress on the criminal case, both Janine and Paula have found ways to work through the pain this case has caused them and their families. Paula mostly finds help from her dogs.
I have two Shiba Inus and a Jack Russell Dachshund and mix. Yeah, he's my little old man. He's right here.
And both Janine and Paula do what they can to focus on the lives their parents lived and the selfless choice they made to donate their bodies to science.
My father had a way of getting himself tangled into all kinds of things. He was just that kind of person. I mean, I can see this now. Of course he's in the middle of this, you know? And my brother and I laughed about it a little bit.
Janine holds on to hope that her father's donation will still contribute to medical progress, even if it's not the way he imagined.
My father's goal of trying to help medicine in its whole, I hope, was achieved, that somebody got something out of his donation, that there was some good that came out of that. But maybe also he'll be part of the process that changes some of this. And so that even on top of the donation to begin with is even more admirable to think that he was part of a process that actually got changed because the system failed him.
Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Ian Mont. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.